Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Blue and Orange Nation Talking Mets podcast. This is your host, Vinny. I also have my co-host, Mike, with me as well. How are you tonight, Mike?
Doing okay.
Welcome to the show. We have a good show for you tonight. We are going to be talking about a few things with the Mets Hot Stove. We're going to talk about the event that the Mets had last night for season ticket holders, which was pretty interesting. I was actually fortunate enough to attend, so I'll fill you in on that. We also have a special guest, which is Gary from the Mets billboard campaign, which is pretty interesting. We'll talk a little bit about that. And we should have another rant from our favorite Artie. But first, Mike, you know, we are thankfully getting pretty close to the end of the off season, and you know, I think when we have our next podcast in 2 weeks, we will actually be at the day of. I think that is actually the day of Pitchers and Catchers, if I remember correct, if I have it correct. And you know, it's I gotta tell you, we've been watching baseball for a long time. This to me has been one of the longest off seasons that I can remember. I don't know how you feel.
Well, it has been pretty dead. 2 years ago, we had the off-season that I always refer to as the winter of Markham, because that was
yes.
The only thing that happened the entire winter. So this is right there with it, you know. So we're in an interesting era of, you know, I think the assumption is that if you're a Met fan, you're also maybe you're a fan of the X Games, and so, you know, you're too busy during the winter to follow the team.
Maybe that's the secret with Sandy. Maybe that's what he thinks.
I think
it could be. Maybe that's, you know, they've done some data mining into the fans. But while we're talking about Sandy, let me talk a little bit about the season ticket holder event from last night, where Sandy and it was really the key members of the Met front office here. Dee Podesta was there. JP Ricciardi was there. John Rico was there. It was moderated by Howie Rose. And, you know, look, I would definitely not characterize anything that was said there last night, Mike, as in any way either groundbreaking or surprising. But there were a couple
Now that I know that JP was there, I do have one quick question, because I didn't see this in any of the accounts. Did he see his shadow?
I don't know if he did. He did not tell us his winter prognostication. And the level of questions, I don't mean to disparage my fellow season ticket holders, but that would have been a question that would have fit right in with the types of questions that they got. in all seriousness, thankfully, the first question of the night was the shortstop question. And it was a little bit of a roundabout question the way it was asked, and Sandy himself, you know, summarized the question before he answered it as, so are you asking me what the hell have I been doing for the last 2 months? Which is what you wanted to hear, right? Said that they looked at 8 to 10 shortstop possibilities. He said, you know, they did look at things. He felt that that was the position on the field to upgrade, you know, including pitching staff. He didn't really feel like they had holes to fill. That was the hole to fill. And so he said, you know, look, they didn't want to trade Syndergaard. He specifically said that when the shortstop question came up, they did not want to trade Syndergaard, and they did not think that any of the folks that were out there represented big enough upgrades to warrant making the deal. That's what he said. Look, that's where we're at. He said they looked, and they didn't think that there was any upgrades worth making the move for, so that's what they did. They didn't do anything. He's comfortable with Wilma, which I find pretty interesting. considering. And he says that, you know, that's the only spot on the field that he even wanted to upgrade. Now, you can make a lot of, I don't know if I love that answer, frankly, because, you know, we could look at a team like the Washington Nationals. Washington Nationals had a pretty damn good team, and they upgraded. You know, they had perhaps the best pitching staff, right? And they turned around and added the ace that was available in the free agent market, the best free agent pitcher available. So it's a little strange to say, you know, our team is so good that we're only looking to upgrade one spot. But, it, you know, look, give him some credit. That's their vision for the team, and that's what he said. So he did address at least the shortstop question, and at least it made it seem like they were looking at options. Now, you also had a couple of other interesting things that came up. He was asked about Matt Harvey and about will he be limited in terms of his workload coming off surgery. And, you know, the answer was Sandy actually wanted to correct the question to say he doesn't think that his workload will be limited. It will be managed. Semantics alert, I guess. The lawyer and him came out big time. He said that he feels that when he had a discussion with Matt about the number of innings that he had in mind for him this year, which he said he did not want to share with us publicly, that Matt was pleasantly surprised, that it was a higher number, I assume, than Matt thought it would be. And he said the only thing he did say, you know, with any kind of even though he couched it, was that he could see Matt being held back from the opening series in Washington and perhaps not starting a game until the home opener a week later, which, to me, that's fine. I don't see that as an issue at all. Another thing that we had going on, another question that came up that I found was interesting was he was asked, you know, back kind of to the shortstop thing, but I think it speaks to more than just the shortstop, was he was asked about whether the Mets would have interest in the Cuban shortstop that just was declared a free agent the other day. And, look, he said that they like him, but that he could not see them being players for him. And while the answer did revolve around money, surprise, surprise, it wasn't in the way I think that we all would have anticipated. He didn't say his contract is more than we can afford. What he said was that, you know, being the way that the whole international, you know, signing situation occurs and how it all lays out, you would have to pay a penalty because you'd be going over your allotment. And at the same time of going over your allotment and paying the penalty, it would also preclude you from signing other top-tier free agent international players for the next 2 years. I think he didn't say it, but I think during the research, you couldn't sign another player for more than a $300,000 bonus if you exceeded your cap. And he made reference to guys like Ahmed Rosario and players like that who the Mets have signed using those international free agent dollars that you would not be able to get if you went and signed him in Kana. So, if you know, it that explanation, you know, it's funny. It still goes in line with the we don't want to spend the money to sign the guy thing, yet it's a little bit more palatable because I do see a little bit of a business reason why you would not do it. I don't know what your feelings are on that, Mike. He likened it, by the way, Sandy, to the stock market. He said, you know, should you go all in on Shake Shack or would you want to diversify your portfolio? I think that was a poor situation considering that Shake Shack doubled its first day. So I think that's a pretty good move for me.
He might want to pick something else.
I don't know if that was the best one to go with because if this guy is a Shake Shack and doubles your investment in about 4 hours, I don't know if anybody would turn that down. But anyway, you know, let me pause there, Mike. You know, I want to get your thoughts on that or anything else that you heard about from the event.
Yeah, well, I mean, the stuff with Moncada, you know, look, I'm a skeptic. It's hard for me to believe it, that isn't really being driven heavily by money, but, you know, I'm not there. I also understand, we also know his philosophy, so I'm sure he's also driving that a little bit. Let's see who they sign. You know, I mean, let's see how aggressive they really are in the next couple of years in that international market. If they're aggressive in it and they go after a lot of the higher-priced guys, Now that they didn't do this, then, you know, bully. And
right.
And you know, we'll see.
Right.
One other thing I did notice, see if the account was correct, that I found you know, just personally refreshing was, and I wish people would pick up on it, especially around the internet, was Sandy himself said, "Don't judge me on the moves I make or don't make in the off season. Judge me on my record." Is that, did he say that?
What he said was, the question, Mike, was about should he be, what grade would he give himself for his off season so far? And he said, and he said, he made a joke about he would prefer pass fail rather than that, of course, you know, always the jokester. And he said that he also would not, he doesn't think that he should be judged based on the off season so far. He wants to be judged once the season starts.
Yeah, and I'm down with that. You know, I mean, so far it's been four losing years, and every time I try to discuss Sandy with somebody, they tell me about this move or that move, you know, that move. And bottom line, the teams have been bad. So if he had been judging himself on that standard the last 4 years, he's lucky his owners didn't do that because they extended him.
That's a great point. So anyway, that's, you know, that was what he said about that. And look, the proof's in the pudding. He didn't have to say that, Mike. He is,
right.
You know, with all of the optimism, you know, being professed by everyone, Terry Collins saying he thinks they're going to be a playoff team. And just, I think the last point about the event, he was asked if it would be considered a disappointing season if they did not make the playoff. And he said, you know, he said, well, he would not say, he would be disappointed. He did agree. But he said that that would not be the only thing that would characterize this as a successful season. That was the other statement. So look, here's the thing. I don't think any of this is a surprise. I don't think any of this should be viewed as, again, stuff that you wouldn't have expected to hear. But, you know, he did come out with it. And, you know, he did throw that out there. The mood of the room, Mike, was surprisingly optimistic and patient. I mean, there were questions, if you even want to call them as questions, that said, you know, we have the best farm system in baseball. Teams are envy of us. We love what you're doing. It wasn't a when are we going to start winning. So, it's interesting, you know, because, you know, maybe we're a little bit slanted by the perception that we get on social media. That social media makes it appear that, you know, people are really losing their mind about this whole thing. That wasn't the vibe. It was a little bit of a, you know, thing. We kind of like how things are going and keep up the good work. Somebody actually said that, and Sandy said, okay, thanks, goodbye, like a joke, like my work is done here. So that sort of thing. So, look, but I think no matter what is said, nobody cares about what anyone, be it Sandy, be it Terry, be it the players, nobody cares what anyone says on February 5th, okay? It's all going to be, he's right. The most important thing that Sandy said all night is judge him based on the season. And I think we all need to do that. We all need to just say, if this is the quote-unquote plan, let's see how the plan plays out. If it works out great, tip our hats to Sandy, and we'll all be happy. I don't care what plan gets them to win, Mike. If they win, I'm happy. If they don't, then we'll see what that means for future quote-unquote plans.
Hey, I want them to win. I'm not going to be happy otherwise. Sounds like there's a lot of people in the room that don't care whether they win or not. Good for them.
It's a little strange. Now, Mike, we have our special guest that are joining us right now, who I think, again, we were kind of talking about the mood of the room being surprising to us. And I think our special guest is, you know, I think a kind of the embodiment of what we think the other side of the fence is. And this is Gary, who is, he's the founder of what we'll term the Mets Billboard campaign. But when Gary talks, I think he's going to explain to us that it's even more than that and what it's all about. Gary, you're on with Mike and Vinny on the Blue and Orange Nation Talking Mets podcast. How are you tonight?
Mike and Vinny, I'm great, and the reason is I put a second mortgage on my house, and I put it all into that Shake Shack IPO, so I am just happy as can be.
You know what I'm saying? I don't know if that was really the best example for Sandy to give, because if you're telling me, would I like to have my mutual fund getting 4.5%, in a year, or would you rather me double my money for that I put in at 9:30 by the time it got to, one in the afternoon?
I have to say, Vin, I'm going to give you the example he should have used. Would it be better for me to spread all my money around or give it all to Bernie Madoff and put it in one fund?
That was the example to use. It's 7:15 and we already have gone there. That's pretty... But anyway, look, Gary, I'd like to, I'd like you to kind of give an overview of what your campaign is all about. And let me just preface it before you even start. Look, I know you're pretty active on social media, and it's really helped with your campaign, frankly. But it's a bit of a polarizing topic on social media. There are folks who, absolutely are on board and behind you and promote you as much as they can. And then I've even seen people, if we're going to use Twitter as an example of any kind of rational behavior, I think we're making a mistake from the get-go. But there are folks who are like, okay, if you have supported this program, we are going to block you and not listen to you. So you're kind of getting the extremes on both sides about the campaign. But I want to make sure you have a platform here to kind of just, tell us what it's about and let people decide for themselves.
Yeah, it's really about just being frustrated over the years since the Madoff Ponzi scheme happened. And sitting back and being patient and letting them tell us, hey, you know what, we got to right the ship. We got to tear down the team. We're kind of at a good point anyway for somewhat of a rebuild. Hang with us. We're going to sell off some key pieces of the team. And we're going to get some good prospects. Through that time, we'll be able to right our financial ship, get our house in order. When these kids are ready to come up, we'll be able to help invest back into the team and help them out. And where my frustration lies is we're at that point where it's time to help these kids out. And it was almost time to help them out last year, but Harvey got hurt, so it was like, okay, we'll give you one more year. And so now we're at this point where it's time to put the foot on the pedal, and I'm not seeing it happen. And a lot of fans are not seeing that happen. And it's very frustrating. So we have this dilemma of we're very excited for the future because of DeGrom and Wheeler and Harvey and Lagares doing, superhuman things out in the field. And we're so encouraged by what's happening. And then they're sitting on their hands. And it's like, what's going on? And so that's why we're here.
Okay, and so then that kind of goes to my question about timing, because that's another thing that some people ask about and talk about a lot when they talk about your campaign, is, that the timing to some, they don't understand because they look at it as, isn't this when things are turning around? Why are we expressing so much negativity? But what you're saying is that's the main reason why you're so, and you use the word frustrated, which I think is a great word, is because this is the time. You almost forgive the last couple of years of fiscal responsibility, to use some political correct terms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have no doubt in my mind that the Wilpons love the Mets, and they want the Mets to succeed. But at this point, those financial decisions and operational decisions that they have made have put them in a position where they cannot operate a New York City team properly. And so a couple of years ago, when it was actually the second Ponzi scheme that they were embroiled in happened, is like, you know what? That was a pretty big deal. That was a big hit. A lot of their money was tied in it. It was a shame they went in and did that instead of Shake Shack, but that's what they did. And so it burned them. And he kind of just hoped, well, they have so many more other assets with Sterling Equities and all the real estate and everything else. It's like, you know what? these guys are pretty sure-footed. They should be able to get out, and they have SNY. And really all they've done is leveraged SNY with all this debt to help keep them running. And you don't see any light at the end of the tunnel of what's going on.
No,
and so that's why it's
point.
Now.
That's a fair point. That is a fair point. So tell me a little bit more, you know, specifics. So, you know, what are you doing? You know, what is the end result of the campaign? And even give a little bit, I think it's an interesting story, Gary, for you to tell about even the mechanics of the campaign, how it happened and how you raised funds.
Yeah, how it happened was literally being bored at work on a very slow day while the holidays are approaching on a Friday morning and just being like, you know, what the Jets guys did was so cool. And so I'm like, I wonder how much these billboards cost. And so I start tweeting out, hey, we could totally buy a billboard over here for like $4,000. And other people are like, yeah, go for it. Yeah, that sounds like fun. And I just started digging deeper and I reached out to a billboard representative from Lamar, and I was like, hey, can I get a quote on this one that's on the Van Wyck Expressway? And he's like, oh, that's $20,000. I'm like, all right, I'll see you later. And he's like, no, let me talk to you. I think we can do some stuff. And I sat back, and I'm like, if I talk to this guy, I'm going to get roped in, and I'm going to buy these billboards, or I'm going to try and, you know, create a campaign to buy these billboards. I shouldn't talk to this guy. And so I sat on it for an hour, and then I'm like, I'm going to talk to this guy. So we talked, and he was able to get me a deal for two billboards right on Roosevelt Ave, both printed and installed for 4 weeks for $4,500. And so that's what the initial campaign was created around Kickstarter. So you go on Kickstarter.com, you create your purpose, what you want to do with the project, throw some pictures up there, and ask people to give a complete stranger their money that they work very hard for. And a big supporter of this campaign was MesmerizedOnline.com and their community, and also a bunch of great guys on Twitter that just kept promoting it, and they got bought into the campaign, and we kept campaigning. And then once Pedro Martinez's comments hit about Mets fans being apathetic, and that was kind of our whole thing, stop being apathetic to the Wilpons, you know, we need to fight and get our team back, you know, that kind of really created this groundswell. And so what that groundswell did was, instead of just trying to raise $5,000, we ended up raising almost $7,000, and now we have a third billboard going in at Port St. Lucie in March. That's going to be on I-95 on the southbound roadway towards Tradition Field. So that's where
impressive.
We stand today.
That is pretty impressive, I have to say, for you to get that much funding. I was not aware of the fact that you had raised that kind of money. That's pretty impressive.
I'm dumbfounded about it.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought that, to be honest with you, if you hadn't told me. Mike, I don't know if you were aware of those details, but that's pretty impressive.
You know, I actually was aware, and I knew he raised enough for the billboard in St. Lucie, which I think is great because you're going to have something up before the season even begins that way and really get this into consciousness to maybe separate this issue a little bit from the team.
And that's kind of the tough balance of what we're trying to do. And that's kind of been the tough balance ever since the beginning, to go back to one of your earlier questions, too, about, you know, this is kind of a negative campaign in a way. And in a way it is. But in a way, it's not. It's, you know, the whole intent is focus on ownership, and it's pro-team. And if we keep saying we are about this team because we want this team to succeed, there's a lot of positivity about that. And so just trying to keep that kind of energy going. And so now to kind of continue with the question that you had earlier of, you know, how to start where we're going, you know, so I went from, you know, a month and a half ago of creating a Kickstarter campaign, and now I'm doing things at night like researching trademarks of Sterling Equities and what they've assigned to, just so I don't get in trouble with anything that I might promote. And I'm looking up 503c status for nonprofit businesses. And I'm sitting back here being like, in December, if anyone ever told me I'd be doing any of this stuff, I would tell you you're nuts. And so kind of what we're doing now for some anticipation, because we're already getting a bunch of T-shirt sales on the website with all the proceeds going to future endeavors, we're building up more campaign material. We already have the images and the billboards locked up. Everything's paid for. Everything's all set. So the Kickstarter campaign is completely done. The only thing I have to do is send out photos and T-shirts to people for prizes to say thank you very much. And so now we're kind of anticipating another groundswell coming up. People, once they actually see the billboards up, once we actually prove that we're legitimate, because people have given us $7,000 and we haven't done anything yet. There's no billboards yet. And people are still are buying shirts right now. And, you know, we're just printing them right now. We haven't proved anything to anyone. And so what we're doing is we're getting ready. So once we actually prove that we're legitimate and we're not going to put up a billboard that says, let's go Yankees, and people are actually like, wow, these guys are really going to do what they say they're going to do, we anticipate kind of more of a groundswell. And we're going to have messages ready to go on whether it's mobile billboards driving around MLB offices or things like that. We have some really great plans anticipated.
That's great. That's great. I have one more thing I want to say, Mike, and then I'll throw it to you. Look, when I heard about this, you know, look, one of the things that I think, you know, the Jet campaign, I think, was a little bit different because it was targeted at John Idzik, the general manager. He was fired, Idzik banner, and he did get fired. However, you know, and what it, is there a correlation? The team was terrible, but you know, Woody hearing that the fans had enough of him could have conceivably factored in him deciding, you know what, we should clean house here. You know, I think that, you know, if somebody thinks that the Wilpons will see the billboard and they'll immediately start calling their investment bankers to sell, I think that's a stretch. However, if the Mets are unfortunately having a poor season, which we all really don't want, and there is kind of media attention around the billboard and the other things, which I know you want to get into some of those other things you're talking about too, just the vibe of dissatisfaction, let's lump everything you do, Gary, together, into just kind of, you know, giving a voice to that dissatisfaction. You know, could it result in, you know, if they have a nickel to spend, that they would spend it because they're combining poor performance with fan revolt to go a little bit overboard? I do think that could happen. And so, you know, before I throw it to Mike, Gary, I mean, would that be your goal? Or in your mind, is this truly about, you know, we got to figure out how to get somebody to buy the team off their hands?
But I think you're very right on target with that, because if a billboard was going to take down a billionaire, I would have done it 5 years ago. And I'm sure across the United States, there's other people with other gripes against billionaires that would be very ready to put up a billboard to get them down. But think of it as kind of a cog in a machine. And so you have these humble billboards there, and that has a particular subset of the fan base that has a particular message. And then you got things going on like Joel Sherman's article the other day in the New York Post, which was really kind of a put up or shut up kind of article. And there's other media too, whether it's Bitter Bill over at New York Daily News and some of the other guys that are just saying, hey, and Ken Rosenthal, hey, it's time to put up or shut up. And so I think when you have all these pieces to a puzzle, all these cogs in a machine, and collectively they're working together, I think it can promote some change here. And so we might not be able to take the billionaires down, but you know what? Whether or not they have a good season or a bad season, and I really hope they have a good start because they got a lot of games against the NL East in the first month. Like, I really need them to have a good start. But regardless of what happens, if all these different components are working together with a solid message, I think it can at least promote change and get operational changes within the team that says, you know what, we got to stop focusing on these condos so much and these shopping malls so much, and we got to put some more efforts in this team or we're going to lose it.
I think that's you know, if that is what happens, if it's either win or if we don't win, that's the kind of reaction you get. I think that's all you can ask for as a fan.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, Gary, I'm probably older than you. I'm just going to guess because I'm pretty old, and I know I'm older than Vinny. And I remember the M. Donald Grant D. Relay years very well. And I can tell you there was tremendous media pressure and negativity around the owners. And I think it had a lot to do with them eventually selling. And so that's my way of saying that when people keep saying that this would that there's under no
Yeah, I think we lost Mike for a minute there, but
he's gone.
I think his point was that for folks, you know, if for somebody who remembers that era, and look, it is a different world, and you would think that the world we're in today with social media is more conducive to having this kind of groundswell. But so I think Mike's point was even then, you know, because people were going a little bit, you know, crazy in the media about this, they figured out a way to still make it work and, you know, actually push them out. Or the pressure, they said, you know what, we shouldn't continue, we should sell the team. So if it happened then, you know, maybe there is, you know, more of an impact that something like this can make than people would normally think. And that's a good thing. But look, you know, tell us a little bit more, Gary, about what's next for you guys.
Okay. So right now, today, what we started to do was what we call PSA announcements, like public service announcements. And what these are going to be are just little images, and you're going to see a guy that looks somewhat close to Mr. Met, but it's actually his disenfranchised cousin called Flushing Frank. And Flushing Frank is going to give these little blurbs that are going to express some of the things that we're frustrated about. It's very easy on Kickstarter for me to kind of put our whole premise and our whole project there and for it to stay stagnant. And we have a website there that has our whole premise. But Twitter and Facebook are constantly moving. And you can't keep what you want to say there. And even if you do, it kind of gets stale. And so you have to kind of throw new rocks in the lake and get people's attention. And so with these PSAs, the goal is to have a nice, quick blurb about why we're frustrated with the team. And so we had our first one today, and it was focused around Jeff Wilpon and the Lee Castergene lawsuit and one of the comments that he allegedly stated. And some of the other things that we're going to kind of focus on are the Ponzi schemes. A lot of people know the Bernie Madoff one, but they're not too familiar with the smaller one that happened right before. We might even do one on the fact that they're paying Brett Saberhagen over the next 25 years, because everyone knows that Bobby Bonilla is getting paid over the next 25 years. But, you know, that they also use those Bernie Madoff investments to try and make money off of the deferred payments of Brett Saberhagen. And so we're going to put those tidbits out there just to keep that awareness going. This is why we're upset. This is why there's issues with the team. And even if the team is successful, it might be in spite of the Wilpons, and maybe there really is time for a change. So that's one of the things that we're doing. The next efforts that we're focusing on is we're looking at mobile billboard trucks, because there are no advertisements anywhere near MLB offices that are on Park Ave, which is about two doors down from Grand Central Station or Grand Central Terminal. And Grand Central has some advertisements that are underneath where the trains are, but that's about it. And so we think MLB needs to have a spotlight put on them too, and we feel that they're very culpable for keeping the Wilpons propped up. And so we'd like to get some advertisements that are focused to them, that they see them. And then we're going to do a little more grassroots effort where we're looking actually at lawn signs. So if you think about campaigns, and I really don't want to think about another political campaign right now, But when they occur, people have these little lawn signs out in their yard with a particular candidate that.
That's an interesting idea about the lawn sign. About the lawn sign. That's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
So, hey, Mike, you there? You there, Mike? I think we lost Mike and Gary. But that's an interesting idea. Could you imagine if you see that sort of thing around? That's pretty cool. But, you know, hey, look, let's see how this stuff works. I mean, I think he's really onto something. There really could be something interesting here happening in terms of this campaign. And, you know, the idea that, you know, maybe it leads to some change, you know, maybe it's not that far off. We shall see. Anyway, that was Gary from the Mets billboard campaign. I'm sorry he fell off. Mike, we have you back.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I think the Wilpons came over and cut my phone line. I just dialed back in with the cell. I apologize.
Right. No, and something may have happened there in terms of Gary. We may have lost him. But still, that's very interesting. I think that, you know, we talk about this all the time, about, you know, the state of the Met fan base and what kinds of things that people are worried about and how people are feeling about things. And to talk about the fact that, you know, it shows the contrast to what I had said about the meeting last night, the season ticket holder event, and how people were feeling there versus something like this. It's pretty interesting to see that contrast. And look, he said it. It is 5 years, I guess, of this. They never use the word rebuild, you know, publicly. But of the rebuild, and, you know, it's, while some folks are very optimistic about the season, and I would characterize myself as fairly optimistic about the season, there's also this frustration, and, you know, Gary kind of gives it a voice. We have Gary back that we just can wrap up. Gary, sorry we lost you there. Hope you heard us. We were kind of recapping that, but I did want to thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Yeah, I really appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on, and let me kind of advertise everything that's going on and speak about what's going on.
No, we appreciate it.
Yeah, sorry
it.
For those technical
again,
difficulties on my end.
Yeah,
guys.
Sorry about the technical difficulties. I don't know if you heard Mike. You know, Mike is thinking that perhaps the Wilpons had the phone lines cut. But, look, I think that, all joking aside, I think it's, you know, again, I think that we talked about right before you dialed in, Gary, that I was at the season ticket holder event, and folks were extremely, I would say, on the positive end, and maybe more positive than I would. You know, again, you can't use social media as a guide. That's a mistake. But more positive than you would think folks are if you see folks on social media and what they think about the team. And I think it's important to kind of show your perspective and what, you know, kind of some other folks are thinking. And that there is this segment of the fan base that's frustrated and wants change and wants results. And the amount of money you raised is pretty indicative that fan base is really there. So thank you for coming and for sharing that, and good luck with the program.
Take care, guys.
Take care.
So there you have it, Mike. I mean, again, we talked about it before it happened, that's a, you know, it's a polarizing topic, and it's, you know, something that, you know, some people don't even want to talk about. But, you know, it's pretty interesting to hear the kind of things he's doing on a small, self-started,
right,
Kickstarter campaign, raising that money. And we'll see. And we all hope that he doesn't need that, if you know what I mean.
I think it's a long-term, I wouldn't say long-term, intermediate. I can see why people are getting nervous and frustrated, not just about the current situation, meaning unless something changes, we're looking at how long before Harvey's gone, how long before Wheeler's gone. You know, it's a scary situation. And as fans, you know, I think that's part of the frustration, that even some of us that are optimistic maybe for the current, 5 or 6 years, sure enough, we have some prospects and we might be good in the short term. That's
right.
Not going to be so awesome if then all these guys are just going to bolt. So I think there's a lot of undercurrents and a lot of, you know, it naturally, as a fan, you want to be optimistic. But
right.
It's a, you know, it's a difficult period is what I would say.
I hear you. I really do. So, you know, let's see what happens with the season.
Yep.
I think that a lot is on the line, and it's not just people like Terry Collins' job, frankly. I think that there is a lot of, you know, what is going to be the tenor of the fan base, depending on what happens here with, you know, the season. And look, there are variables. I do think, not to give Sandy an out, but his comment that he made about it's not just about wins and losses, meaning not just about making the postseason or not, that's not the be-all, end-all of whether or not this is a successful season or not. To some extent, I agree with him. I don't think it's just about being in the postseason, whether that this is going to be a good year or not. I think it depends. You know, like, for instance, Mike, if this team wins 89 games and Wilma Flores is great, everything comes through, but they win 89 games and they don't make the playoffs, I don't think we could say get rid of everybody. You know, because somebody gets the second wild card with 90. So, you know, to that, and I know that that's pretty an extreme example, but if you use that idea, you know, it kind of makes sense that you shouldn't be saying postseason or bust, especially considering what we've had the last few years. My God, if we're saying postseason or bust, you know, we haven't been over 500 in a long time.
I would give Sandy and everybody the following out, which is, you know, I'm a big believer in you can only hold people responsible for what they can control, right? So all Sandy and the front office and the Wilpons and all of them can control is the team they put together. So, you know, win 90 games like they did in 1984, and they'll make the playoffs, and they didn't in 1984, different format, I understand. I still thought they put a hell of a team together, and it was a great year. But, you know, right, if they only win 83 and 85 gets in, I'm not going to feel so good just because they were only two games out when it ended.
Yeah, I completely understand that. You're right. So we'll see. Like you made, that's a great point, that we worry about what you can worry about, and we can worry about this team. And he's making a lot of calculated risks and assumptions about players on this team. If he ends up being right on some of these, we're going to have to tip our hat to him postseason or not.
Right.
So we shall see. But that was a very interesting spot. I think Gary did a great job. And I think it's important to hear from that, you know, segment of the fan base. Now, we're going to be joined by Artie for our rant of the week in a few minutes. We'll see what he's fired up about. But I wanted to talk about our Met of the week today a little bit earlier than usual. And, Mike, I think we picked this Met of the week. You know, he's not a current player, but he was kind of in the Met news of this week because it was 7 years ago this week, or I guess 7 years ago, the end of last week, that he was acquired by the Mets, and at the time was a blockbuster trade. And you could, if you really want to go back to the Sandy conversation, it's almost the, you know, exact opposite, the polar opposite of what Sandy's been doing, was that trade, which was when Omar Minaya went and acquired Johan Santana from the Twins in 2000, I guess it was in 2008, 7 years. And look, I loved Johan Santana. First of all, that winter, I think you and I had talked a lot that winter. That was an amazing, you know, whole time, because there were rumors about Santana being traded for probably about a month and a half. And it was Yankees, Red Sox, but you would read a Met beat writer say, Omar Minaya says don't count the Mets out. And then you would hear, you know, all this stuff, and Omar Minaya would say don't count the Mets out. And then you would hear don't count the Mets out, but they don't want to trade Fernando Martinez, who was their top prospect at the time. But don't count the Mets out. And we kept reading that. And, you know, before you know it, it was, yeah, the Yankees dropped out, the Red Sox dropped out, he's getting traded to the Mets. It was just an amazing, you know, that whole sequence. And then, look, his Met career, he didn't win multiple Cy Youngs like we hoped he did, but he gave us some great moments including the only Met no-hitter in their history. I know you loved Johan too, man.
Oh, yeah, I loved Johan. I was so excited, you know, when we got him. Yeah, I remember that whole thing with the Yankees and the Red Sox and all that. I think Jed Lowry was, like, the key guy that the Red Sox wouldn't give up, if I remember correctly, to help get the deal done for the Mets. And then, you know, it's funny. When I think of Johan, I always think about two games, one of which, you know, one he's most famous for now, the no-hitter, and I was not there. Were you at the no-hitter?
I was not at the no-hitter.
Yeah, no, I was not at the no-hitter either. Now, I think we were both at the other game, which is one thing about the Mets of that era, the last game of the season in 2007 and 2008 might have been really rough, but those next to last games of the season, they don't get any better than that. And that 2008 next to last game of the season from Johan was right up there, you know, when I talk about pitching performances that I've seen in my life.
Especially when you consider, Mike, that it came out later that he was pitching with a sore shoulder when he did that.
Right. And on 3 days rest.
Right. So, yeah, look, it was one of those things where, you know, if you look at it in the cold light of day, did he live up to that contract statistically? You'd have to say no. But I'm glad we made that move. And I think it also, not to make this too much of a comparison to today, but it kind of shows you that sometimes those prospect for established player guys, you make them, and even if they don't work out exactly the way you want them to, they're still worth doing. And I think that's a good example of one that was still worth doing.
Yeah, I'm going to sound sarcastic, but I'm really just sort of looking at it in a weird way, which is, what a great move, because the money that was spent on Johan, they hadn't spent it. They would have just lost it with Madoff anyhow, right? It would have been in the bank. And
that's,
you know,
a great
as much
way
as
to
I
look
joke.
At it.
And then the team, you know, after what happened to the team, whether we had Johan, didn't have Johan, I have seen nothing in the 5 years. You know, originally that was part of the narrative, that, like, until we get that contract out from under this contract to that contract, but it wasn't going to matter. You know, it's not like when we got out from under Johan's contract, we went out and did much, you know, as an organization.
No, we didn't.
So what the heck? We had him. It was good.
That's great. That's great. All right. We are now joined by Artie from Brooklyn, New York talk radio favorite. Artie from Brooklyn. Artie, you are on the Blue and Orange Nation Talking Mets podcast with Mike and Vinny. How are you today, sir?
Hey, guys. How's everything going? You know, if Johan doesn't pitch the no-hitter, do you still feel like that? Is that one game that got us, that great game that you're talking about, is that game worth the contract, or you're adding the no-hitter to it? Because I think if there's no no-hitter, I don't think you could say that Johan's contract was worth it. And then here's what you got to add to it. When you're making the trade, you're just going on the basis that these guys, the prospects didn't work out. But suppose the center fielder that went to Milwaukee is still on the Twins. Now you think that trade worked out?
Look, I hear you.
Was it Gomez, right? Is it Gomez?
No, yes, Carlos Gomez. And again,
yeah,
Twins,
I would love
he did
to
not
have Gomez
blossom
on this
until
team right
after
now.
He left them. He did not blossom until right. after he left the Twins.
Right.
Which I do think
right.
makes a bit of a difference.
Big difference.
You make a good point. I do think the no-hitter makes a big difference in my mind. But even without that, you know, again, Carlos Gomez at the time, again, it wasn't somebody even we were really concerned about giving up. Like, we were willing, more than willing to trade him because Fernando Martinez was our untouchable piece. So that's a little bit, you know, look, if it works out, that stuff happens sometimes, that somebody gives up a player who they think is not really that good and he ends up doing something. Look, you could go with Melvin Mora. Melvin Mora traded for Mike Bordick, ended up being a quote-unquote terrible trade. Mike Bordick did nothing, and Mora played pretty well for several years. But at the time, Melvin Mora wasn't a big prospect. So that element of it, you can't kick yourself and say, man, we traded Melvin Mora because he wasn't considered to have that kind of ceiling. You were more disappointed
right.
that you didn't get anything out of Bordick.
I think that now that we're like a guard, not a guard, I don't want to say a garbage team, but it's like we pay attention to the prospects more. I think that when you say I'm going to trade Syndergaard for, I don't know, say Tulo, right? I'm a little bit more, even though, I know he's injured, but if he's a healthy Tulo, I guess you do it for sure. But I'm still a little bit apprehensive giving up, always afraid to giving up the Bagwells and the stuff like that, those kind of guys, thinking that your prospect is going to be the next guy. And it's funny, we saw Syndergaard in that mini All-Star game. I think we were all sitting together, or we went to the game, and he looked like the goods. Like, I'm not saying this guy is going to be the next Harvey or whatever, but I don't want to give him up unless we're giving up, unless we're going to get some guy that's going to help our team for the next 5 years. I don't want to give up Syndergaard for just, I don't know, there was a rumor of Syndergaard for the, God forbid, the shortstop for the Cubs. I would never do that. Never. You know?
No, I hear you. So, Artie, what did you want to rant about today?
So, can somebody tell me why is Cologne still on the team? Now, here's the thing, okay? What is our strength on this team? Do we have a strength? But what is our strength?
Austerity.
I would think, bitch, when they made the move for Cologne, I was going, why are they giving him 2 years? The guy can barely stand up. So he pitches okay. And then I said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to do the same thing we did with Bird. We're going to trade him in the middle of the year, right, and get prospects. I'm still waiting. We're paying this guy for a team that has a payroll of $90 million. How are we paying this guy $10 million? It makes no sense. No sense. That this guy probably is our sixth best pitcher, and he's making $10 million, and he's still on his team. How about we take his money and get something that we need? A shortstop. And one more thing, okay? If you see there's three prospect shortstops that were traded, three. One went to the Nationals, one went to the Yankees, and one went to the Chicago Cubs. They all had shortstops. I mean, come on! And we need one. And Stanley's sitting there saying, Twilly Dump, Twilly Dump, we're going to use Wilma Fun. I mean, come on, you can make any sense. Come on! Oh, guys, I can't. Why is it after I talk about how bad we are with Sandy and the money? I need Advil. Why is that? All right, guys.
Have a good one, Mike. Thank you.
Have a good
week. Mike, the question about why is Cologne still on the team is what Artie asked. I guess you could make the question could be phrased a little differently, right, Mike? It could be why was he ever here to start with?
Yeah, I think I like phrasing it that way because I think I know why he's on the team. I know I've got 11 million reasons. Nobody wants that contract. I mean, because there's no way he wouldn't have been dumped in this offseason, you know, for a couple of Groupon tickets if somebody would have took it. So
yeah, okay.
That's why he's still on the team. But given, and not that he was terrible last year, we all know he wasn't. He was okay, maybe a little better than okay. But given the financial realities of the situation, right, that we always have to talk about, given the lack of, you know, other things, the fact that we have all these pitches, that's all we keep talking about is we have all these pitches, right? I've never understood the move, not once.
No, look, I think the move, it has to be, I mean, I don't think he could ever publicly say this, Mike, but it had to be that he was pretty confident that that was a tradable contract. Because, you know, look, given the combination, Artie said, you know, what is our strength? Our strength is, you know, the strength is our starting pitching. And we also seem to have what, you know, we obviously have a tight budget. We have strong pitching, yet we signed a pitcher using a substantial amount of our extra money. That's the head scratcher, you know, and especially if last year was not the year, did you really need to have Colon on the team last year? And if you figured, you know what, we might be good with him, but then when we don't need him the next year, we can trade him. You know, that line of thinking makes it seem like it's possible, you know, that that's the reason why they did it. You know, but, you know, now here we are. We are short on money and long on pitchers, and he's still on the team. It makes it a little bit tough. But the good news is he did pitch very well last year. And if he pitches like that this year, I think, we'll, you know, that would be pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately he does. He's on the roster. I have nothing against him. You know, like, he can be entertaining sometimes. But when he was signed, I compared the signing to Albuquerque. You know, you're giving 2 years to an older guy, frankly, would probably to hope that maybe the first year he's pretty good, right?
Right.
That type of signing makes sense for a large market team trying to compete. We're not really operating like a large market team. I think we can all agree on that. And then last year, were we really trying to compete? I mean, that's always some, like, the, you know, million-dollar question. I think what it really comes down to, and I felt this way last year, is people looked at what we did last offseason and thought they were, like, waiting for Harvey to, you know, really go for it. No, they were really going for it last year. That was
the
definition of going for it.
They must have, or else why would they have made that investment in him?
Right, right. And, I mean, they haven't done so much more this offseason to indicate to change direction at all.
Right. It's a little bit, you know, that is, you know, again, we had Gary on earlier, and, you know, there's a segment of the fan base that is very much focused on, you know, this administration won't spend. You know, Colon is the thing that you pop up and you say, oh, yeah, well, if they're broke and they won't spend, and they could have started last year's rotation with, I don't know, Daisuke, or you could have rushed up Montero, or you could have done something and not signed Colon.
Well, I mean, DeGrom sure looked ready when he showed up.
That's true, too. So if, you know, they are as cheap as a lot of their other moves would lead you to believe, then why did they give a 2-year, $22 million contract to Bartolo Colon? And there's no answer for that. That's what makes this whole situation so bizarre, right?
Yeah, that was a head-scratching move. I've never really, you know, there's a lot of theories on it that he thought he was going to be able to flip him at the break, that, you know, all these, whatever they were, they all sound to me like somebody that got a little too cute.
Well, you know, one of the problems is perhaps, you know, and we're not going to talk. We've got 90 seconds left, Mike, and we are not going to talk about trading Dillinger because we've talked about it on every single podcast. But, you know, maybe one of the reasons why there have been a lack of trades is because Sandy wants to make the ultimate trade. And every trade has to be one that knocks people's socks off. And if he can't do it, he won't do it. And maybe the Colon signing, as you said, got cute, was he envisioned this scenario where he would look like a genius, where he signed Colon, got a year out of him, traded him for prospects the next year, and was like, can you imagine I pulled this off? And so far, that hasn't come to fruition. Well, that about does it for us, Mike. I'd like to thank our guest, Gary. Thank Artie from Brooklyn for another great rant. And the good news, Mike, is the next time you and I speak, pitchers and catchers will actually be throwing baseball in Port St. Lucie.
Hallelujah.
All right. Well, thank everyone for listening to the Blue and Orange Nation Talking Mets podcast, and we'll talk to you again in 2 weeks.